You've probably heard of Scientology.
Why is it a religion? What's it here? What's it doing?
Well, whatever you have heard, if you haven't heard it from us, I can assure you, we are not what you expect. And then decide for yourself.
I am Shannon Perez-Darby with my co-host,
Tajmika Torak.
And welcome to season two of Popaganda.
It's season two.
I love season two. Season one was so fun. I'm so excited for season two.
I just feel like we learned so much last season. And it just gets more and more fun, and we never run out of things that we could potentially talk about.
What are we going to start off our season two with?
We are going to start off season two with a conversation about Tom Cruise and Scientology.
I can't wait. I can't wait.
I have been so interested. I won't say excited because it's kind of a grimy conversation that we're about to have, but I am very interested in having this conversation. And it came to mind, I was visiting my family, watching TV, and I could not escape the Mission Impossible advertisements that kept coming up, like every commercial. It was Mission Impossible.
Did you see the most recent Mission Impossible?
Not to watch it.
I didn't either, but I was just curious.
I know. I did not. My research did not go that far. I did not suffer for the cause of pop culture on that one, but it does exist, and I could not escape the advertisements. So what do you know about Scientology? What is your frame of reference for Scientology?
Just what I saw from tabloids around Katie Holmes and Tom Cruise. This idea I have in my mind that I have not looked into in depth, that she was fleeing, that she had to like run from him with their daughter. One of my favorite things about Scientology is Kate Bornstein, who is such a beautiful trans leader in our communities. And so I had already loved her so much and then saw her speak and talk about how she was a part of the Church of Scientology and part of her experience of having to leave the Church of Scientology and having her family still part of the church and just what the excommunication process was and some of the strategies of harassment. And so really learning from her about what was this experience of leaving the church.
I can call myself a non-binary trans femme identified BDSM dyke diesel femme. That's, you know, I could have all those names.
There's no box for that.
No.
How did you become a Scientologist?
I couldn't figure out who or what I was. What I was didn't make sense. I knew I wasn't boy. And I started looking for some kind of spiritual answer. What attracted me about it was Scientology's notion of a spiritual being. They told me, you are not your body. You're not your mind. You're not your brain. You are your own immortal soul. And they called that soul a Thetan. And I said, so are there girl Thetans and boy Thetans? No, of course not. I thought, this makes sense. Nothing else in Scientology made sense, but that made sense.
And then actually, I forgot about it until you were doing the introduction, but having this very clear memory in my head of Oprah's interview with Tom Cruise, where he's on the couch and he is going hard. He's going hard.
So this is interesting, Tom. We've never seen you behave this way before.
I know.
Have you ever felt this way before? This is the thing. Are you sleeping?
Care.
Are you getting enough sleep?
No, I'm not.
No, but Tom, you've never. Listen to me. Let's focus here.
Okay.
You've never had this kind of feeling before, right? No, yeah. Obviously not.
I honestly haven't.
And really?
I'm not gonna pretend.
I can see you're not.
Well, I mean, I feel like most people, those are a lot of the introductions to Scientology. I mean, Tom Cruise is a huge one, along with John Travolta.
Oh, yeah. He made that weird movie where trying to parody or talk about whatever the tenets of Scientology was as sci-fi. I did not watch it, but it was not well. It was not critically acclaimed.
Well, I wonder why. The thing about Scientology and L. Ron Hubbard is that getting celebrities to be a part of it, both for financial reasons and to effectively promote it in this Hollywood environment, was a strategy of his. And the whole thing is they have so much power around Hollywood because there is an impact to careers once you are a part of this celebrity. This is sort of what the commentary is. Of course, Scientology would be like, no, that's not us. But there's a reason why people who are celebrities or people who are in Hollywood are not publicly backing away from Scientology, or at least that's what folks believe about it. Scientology was made up by a man called L. Ron Hubbard. And the thing that I think is interesting, because we're a podcast about pop culture, is he started out writing pop fiction, sci-fi, that he slowly transitioned into a religion that has core tenets. And there are all these levels that you have to meet to get to the highest level. And for each of those levels, it costs a significant amount of money, of course, to have access to those courses. So in order to get to the highest level in Scientology, you have to spend somewhere between $500,000 to $2 million.
I did not know that. I didn't know there was almost like a pyramid scheme kind of portion where you need to pay levels in. I did not know that.
This was actually something that I knew, but part of my complaints about my comments and concerns about Tom Cruise and the way that he's being treated differently, in my opinion, is the fact that Scientology is actually not accessible to most people. And so most people who are practicing Scientologists are lower level people. They can't even dream to afford to get to the higher level. And so there are lots of people who are millionaires, billionaires that are a part of Scientology. And those are the folks who are really controlling most of what's happening in Scientology. I have this video of Tom Cruise, and I need all of us to just stop for a second and just appreciate that the name of this video is Tom Cruise on Tom Cruise, Scientologist.
No, I wish to be so famous someday that it's like, actually, I don't wish to be so famous, but could you imagine being so famous that you're just like Tejmika on Tejmika? You're like, what?
Amazing. It's a wild video. I feel like we have to start here. If for no other reason, then I can't wait to show it to you.
Tom Cruise on Tom Cruise, Scientologist.
The reviews for his latest screen appearance have been awful.
I think it's a privilege to call yourself a Scientologist, and it's something that you have to earn.
This is Tom Cruise in a film leaked to the internet in praise of Scientology, what it has done for him, and what it can do for you.
We are the authorities on getting people off drugs. We are the authorities on the mind. We are the authorities on improving conditions. Criminon, we can rehabilitate criminals. Way to happiness, we can bring peace and unite cultures.
Proud boast indeed, but then the Mission Impossible star has long been vocal about his support for the controversial religion, regarded by many as a cult. The promotional film was recorded 4 years ago and probably not intended for wide release. In it, he goes on to make some bizarre claims.
Being a Scientologist, when you drive past an accident, it's not like anyone else. As you drive past, you know you have to do something about it because you know you're the only one that can really help.
I just from that clip alone, I don't even know where to start. I don't even know where to start. The piece are like, we can rehabilitate criminals. Oh, wow. There's like a whole transformative justice version of, you know, our Scientologists, the real transformative justice practitioners.
Well, I'm going to tell you no, but yes, please continue.
Okay, sure. Yeah. Okay, great. Well, it was a good spoiler. Oh, the addiction staff, that they're the only people that know how to like heal people's drug and alcohol addiction. Wow. It's hard to even know where to start, but those things really, really jumped out at me. All the car accident piece that Scientologists have like special skills are the only people who can really truly know how to help in a crisis or an emergency. Wow.
Mm-hmm. I saw a clip of this video in a documentary called My Scientology Movie that was produced by Louis Theroux. The idea being that he knew that he couldn't get Scientologists to actually participate in his movie. So he worked with a former senior church official to sort of make a reenactment based on clips of things that Scientologists have actually produced, including videos of David Miscavige, who is the church's leader. It was a really interesting documentary. It sort of had the same feeling as, I don't know if you know who Nathan Fielder is. It kind of has a similar feeling as like The Rehearsal.
I want to talk about in our next one about The Curse. Have you watched The Curse with Nathan Fielder?
No. Oh.
It's a whole journey.
Yeah, I've seen the promos for that, but I haven't watched it yet. So it's kind of got that energy. But what's another thing that's really interesting about this documentary is throughout the production, Mark Rathbun is the one who's walking them through how he would have done auditing. It's sort of like a lie detector machine. They have people attached to it. And when it shows that they're having an emotional response, I've never used an auditor, so let me be clear about that. But the way
Sure. Yeah.
So you're getting this
speculation.
This is all speculation. I don't think it requires a high level emotional response. They're using it to sort of show that you have an emotional response to try to push back. You're not supposed to be reactive. And that's how they clear you. The language is clear. And so there are moments in this documentary where he's sitting in front of Louis Theroux and scaring him and being like, no, we have to clear it. You can't respond. He just keeps going, ha! And he's like, ah!
Wow.
And of course, he's performing this, showing them what it would have been like had they been a part of this. But he's also breaking down the fact that people would be placed in the hole to be re-educated if they somehow fail to live up to what the Scientologists in power require of them. And so there's a lot of violence, there's a lot of surveillance, there is a lot of control, a lot of the things that is pretty widely known to be the components of a cult, including considering people who disagree with Scientology suppressant people, which is sort of what you had brought up around people losing family members or having family members disconnect from them after leaving the church.
That piece you're saying about suppressant, that's one of the pieces that Kate Bornstein talks about so much, is that that's what her family calls her.
How did your time in Scientology come to an end?
Was still homophobic and transphobic. That language wasn't used, but that's what it was.
Do they try and change you?
Yes.
So they don't just kick you out, but they'll try and fix you if you're willing?
You have to be willing. Mm-hmm. And they offered me a choice. And the way they described it, as I would be sleeping on the garage floor outside, I couldn't eat any food in the dining room. I had to wait till everybody else had eaten, then I could eat the scraps they left over. It was either that or I could be excommunicated forever. Excommunicate me.
Have you been in contact with your daughter ever since you left the Church of Scientology, or your wife?
They're not allowed to talk with me at all. If they were to talk with me or read anything that I've written, they would be in trouble with the church.
I'm so fascinated by the organized way that there are enemies of the church and that you are required to do all of these things to attack enemies of the church, including this primary strategy of taking out all of these frivolous lawsuits as a way to try to bankrupt somebody. And so that's what happened to Kate Bornstein, is that then she was having hundreds of frivolous lawsuits that then, you know, dismissed, but you have to respond to each one. And so for each member of the church, it might cost them just a little bit to filing fees, a little bit to follow up, but there's so many of them that they can just take out people. It's like a Scientology version of like doxing someone. You can just have all these little hits that functionally can bankrupt somebody having to respond to all those different lawsuits.
Yeah, and there are lots of documented cases, people recording it themselves, of people from Scientology showing up at their house and following them. We can't talk about Scientology without talking about Leah Remini, because she is also a former member of the church who has put out documentaries, lots of content, lots of interviews, lots of podcasts. And she recently, I don't know how recent it is actually, but she's also written a memoir about her experiences within Scientology. And one of the things that you can see in many of the things that she produces is they often capture that they're being followed by someone from the church, or they're being recorded, or they're being confronted. In this My Scientology movie, there are several moments in the movie where someone from the church shows up and is recording them, is telling them they have to leave a public road that's by their location, by I think it's their headquarters or something that they end up at, but they come out and they're like, you have to get out of here. And he's like, I'm standing literally on a public road. Like, this is not yours. And so part of the thing that I also think is interesting about this video of Tom Cruise is I feel like people are asking, does he know that this sort of violence is happening? Is he aware? And I think from that video, based on the fact that he talks about in the framing of a threat, that no one would talk to him negatively about Scientology, not to his face, I feel like that to me felt like a confession that he knows damn good and well that there are consequences for speaking out against the church. And that if he is not part of implementing those consequences, he enjoys the benefit of being a high-level Scientologist, which means that it's almost an extension of being a celebrity. The way that celebrities are treated in this culture around, you know what I'm saying, they're being treated, they're getting free items, they have lots of publicity, people love them, admire them. There's a deference to celebrity. Other Scientologists who have since left the church have spoken openly about the fact that celebrities, no one is allowed to say no to them. I read an article that said that if Tom Cruise were to come into the Celebrity Center and say, I want a cup of coffee that is exactly 75 degrees with this kind of sugar, and there would be no one in that room that would be allowed to tell him no.
You know, you might be getting to this. The conditions that make for patterns of abuse are...
I was just about to say, yes, please say it.
Exactly. I mean, the conditions that make for patterned abuse are when people don't have autonomy, when people don't have self-determination, when there is an all-powerful figure that whatever they say goes, and then there's a high punishment for not listening. And those are the rampant conditions for all sorts of patterns of abuse, but particularly sexual violence. If you have powerful people who you can't say no to, those are literally the conditions for patterns of sexual violence.
Yes. And in Scientology, here are some other things that happen that contribute to creating an environment where abuse is possible. Children are often separated from their families and raised collectively, but not with a high level of care and attention. They are also working very young, illegally, as a part of the ministry, so churches can get away with doing that. Oh, and I forgot to mention that this is a 501c3 organization on top of being a religious organization. So... that's super fun. They don't pay taxes. And so much of this are things that are protected to some extent because it's a church. People are like, yeah, sure. They're just volunteering. The children are just volunteering. But what's really happening is child labor and abuse. on top of that, if members want to leave that belong to a family, whether that is a child within the family or a parent within the family, they must leave their children behind. If their child does not go with them willingly after having been a part of this religion for so long, they have to leave their family behind. And they also have to suffer the knowledge that there may be consequences for them leaving. And leaving is not easy. Their entire lives. It kind of reminds me of, well, hold on, let me finish my sentence. That was an ADD moment. Their entire, sometimes I don't even finish. I'm like, you'll catch up later. So
fill it in. This is an idea in between those two ideas. You'll pick up the thread.
You'll figure it out.
Perfect for podcasting.
Yeah, it's like a Mad Libs podcast. Just guess what I was about to say. Their financial lives get wrapped up into the church because they are spending lots of money. Part of Tom Cruise's role within the church was he was spending money on building a film production company so that the church could create their own content, their own videos. And so there are people who work in their communications department, right? So like you end up in a space where not only have you been raised in a community where you're not necessarily getting not even a traditional education, just an education that would make it possible for you to leave the church and live independently on your own right away, but you're also financially tied to this religious organization in a way that makes it very difficult to leave. If there weren't also the threat of violence on top of that, it just goes on forever. It's so challenging to think about how you would even begin to create any type of a healthy relationship with anybody involved under the leadership and control of this church. Another really important thing to know is that David Miscavige, who has been known to be violent, allegedly, there are many, many complaints about his violence from former members, especially high-level officials within the church who are no longer a part of it, that he is very violent, very controlling. And how he spends his time is mostly responding to these requests on paper for literally anything that you want to do within Scientology.
I just looked him up. He looks like if you were casting a villain on a TV show. It actually seems made up.
He has only ever done one public interview. You're going to want to definitely take a look at that.
Joining us live tonight is David Miscavige, whose formal title is Chairman of the Board of the Religious Technology Center, the organization which manages Dianetics and Scientology. Mr. Miscavige took over as the head of Scientology in 1987, following the death of the church's founder, L. Ron Hubbard. You've been sitting here very patiently for the first 15 minutes. It's your turn. We're going to take a short segment here to talk, and then we'll take a break, and then we've got the rest of the program to talk. Where would you like to pick up?
There's no question that there's some controversy surrounding Scientology, but if you want to look at what the real controversy is, there's been stories like this one that we saw here for the past 40 years, and yet during that time period, Scientology has continued to grow. In fact, it's 25 times larger today than it was in 1980. I would just like to take up a few of the falsehoods that are in there, because I think this explains a lot why you have the controversy. I don't know that Scientology lends itself so well to the press. In this instance, we did agree that we would have your correspondence come in, and in fact, he did have unlimited access to the church. But then you get a piece like this. For instance, something that isn't mentioned in there is that every single detractor on there is part of a religious hate group called Cult Awareness Network and their sister group called American Family Foundation. Now, I don't know if you've heard of these people, but it's the same as the KKK would be with the blacks. I think if you interviewed a neo-Nazi and asked them to talk about the Jews, you would get a similar result to what you have here.
In this story, he is the leading villain, in my humble opinion. he took over right after L. Ron Hubbard passed away. I don't think the church acknowledges that he actually died. He just left the vessel of his body. It was time for him because he was supposed to live forever. So they had to come up with some kind of story about why he was no longer in his body.
which is a convenient regular cult out, right? Which is just that you do something cosmic, that your being goes to the next plane or whatever, because if you need the leader who is immortal and then they die, you have to make some meaning making of why that was all part of the plan in the first place.
Yeah, and there's nothing that says like, oh no, but he had a divine intervention, like the Church of Latter-day Saints. At least they were like the gold plates that came down from heaven. You know, there's some connection. They're like, nah, he made it up. And we were like, yeah, sounds good. And so we've just been following it. And I know it's not that simple. Obviously, we've already talked about the dynamics of violence and abuse. But as a Black woman, I still just can't fucking get over it. Every time I think about it, I'm just like, what?
For whatever reason, in my mind, when I hear about the tenets of Scientology, I often think about especially the origin story of Mormonism and the Church of Latter-day Saints, because it does in some ways have a similar feel. You're like, and then there's plates. Nobody can see the plates, but I promise they have special things. Inside me, it has that same kind of like, you're just adjusting the story as you go along so that it can be aligned with whatever truth you need to make true at that moment.
Yeah, it reminds me of there was this time when my brother and I were playing in the backyard, the one that's 2 years younger than me, Tony, and we invited our parents out to come watch our show that we had made. This is absolutely a true story. I promise it's relevant. And we started with our show, but then at a certain point, we just started playing and it started to do that thing where kids are like, and then this happened. And then he'd be like, yeah, and then this happened. And my parents just like slowly went inside because they realized we had started, like we were just making that as we were going along at the same time. And that's the energy, like how we continue to create story and meaning around things to justify the way that we're in this church, the way that this church is implementing its policies and culture and all of those things. Another fun thing to know, fun is also an interesting word to use in this, but David Miscavige and Tom Cruise are besties.
They look like they would be creepy villain besties. They both kind of have smiles that doesn't reach their eyes.
From what I understand, based on what Mark Rathbun was saying in my Scientology movie, is that intensity is what they want from Scientologists. They want them to be acting like you being a suppressive person is what is going to cost the universe. You are going to fail us by not showing up and doing your Scientology. You need to be acting like the weight of the world is on your shoulders around being in alignment with Scientology.
And it sounds like that you could stay unreactive or neutral to the things happening in the world. So, you know, in this auditing process, if you're supposed to learn to not react or to just stay even around everything, yes, it could create a vibe where you're sort of bebopping around the world, disconnected from what I think about a task of, for me, of being a human, which is like actually about embodiment, about feeling the feelings I'm having in real time and letting them move through. And that is what I understand is embodied. And if your whole religion/cult is organized around disconnecting you from that, that is how you create conditions to harm people. That's also how you create conditions to be disembodied. And that has a creepy look when you're just trying to just be a neutral person who's above it all. It's a vibe.
How convenient for a church to train people to disassociate. But the one thing that they do know is that Scientology is the only answer. What's also interesting is there is no evidence to support that Scientology is doing a single thing to help the world. There are no addiction recovery centers. There are no emergency car accident clinics, whatever he was talking about. There's absolutely no evidence of that. What is clear is that Scientology as a religion is actually shrinking in numbers. However, they're getting richer. I think that's interesting just as a phenomenon in the United States. Of course, Scientology is global. But when I think about how the gap in wealth is happening in this country, and the fact that Scientology is clearly courting rich people. So I can see why there would be a huge stretch there between, yeah, you don't need as many people if everybody in the church is super duper rich, but where their wealth is also interesting. They're not rich because they have bank accounts that are full of money. They are rich because of the real estate that they purchase.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Right. So they have property all over the world. Many of those properties sit empty. It's not like there are major Scientology church gatherings happening like most American churches where every Sunday people get together. If you're Christian, my tradition, I remember being at church like Sunday morning, Sunday evening, Wednesday was prayer group. Scientology is not like that.
What that makes me think about is a lot of sci-fi sort of futuristic shows have a theme in them where you have the cabal, you know, you have a rich group of folks who survived together by being super rich. And like the 100 has that where, slightly spoiler for the 100, it's like 10 years old. So just keep that in mind.
Actually, at this point, it's your fault if you haven't seen it. So
exactly. There is like after 10 years, you had a chance. But there's a storyline in the 100 where they find this bunker where basically a bunch of rich people survived. Then they have all these antiquities and art and things because they survived by coming together being very rich. That's what you were talking about with Scientology and just getting smaller but richer, you know, consolidating resource so that you could be the few survivors at the top.
Yes, that sounds like what is definitely happening here. There is actually not much benefit to having us little poor dorks out here on planet Earth joining Scientology because we don't actually contribute to the level that celebrities do or people who have a lot more money. No one's trying to save our souls in Scientology. We're too broke.
It's almost like the opposite of a MLM where multi-level marketing, the strategy is you get a little bit of money from having as many people as possible. It's like some reverse of that where you're consolidating and making it so special that actually you don't even worry about people who can't afford it. Fascinating.
Right. It reminds me of LuLaRoe to some extent. I don't know if you watched the LuLaRoe documentary.
Sure did.
I love you. I love that every time I'm like, have you watched it? It's either a yes or a no, but I plan to.
I watch a lot of TV, is part of the prerequisite for having this podcast, is that I spend a lot of time. I'm like, yes, is it worth watching? I've probably watched it.
Yeah,
absolutely. I love that documentary. Yeah.
Me too. But it reminds me of that because if you recall, there was a moment when LuLaRoe had grown to a certain point where they started to say, why is your husband working somewhere else?
Yeah, exactly.
And they started to hire couples. So then when it went bust, it really had a devastating financial impact on the families that were now hired as a couple into that MLM model.
You know, I've done another podcast on my friend Jamie Grant's podcast, Just Sex. We did an episode that was our nonprofits cults and really talking about what are some of the cultist parts of nonprofits. And one of the things I shared there that this reminds me of is the nonprofit I worked at for a long time that was really devastating to leave and had a very complex relationship with. And I feel very healed from that now. But one of the things that happened is that we were told you had to bring your freshest fruits. And we had a non-moonlighting policy. So you couldn't do other kinds of work. Mm. You had to bring your whole thing there and you couldn't make any other streams of income or you weren't doing right by the organization. And so there were multiple people who were therapists or were trying to get coaching kinds of certifications. The leader would literally try to undermine that.
Wow.
And what I finally realized when it was really horrific to leave, and that I had worked there since I was 23, I had worked there for 10 years. And if I left, I was going to have no reference.
Oh my goodness.
Basically, I had been a barista before that. And it was some of this thing where, you know, you were supposed to put everything into there because it made it harder to leave and it was easier to control. You literally made it harder for people to have financial options outside of that job. You know, that same piece around like, oh yeah, well, you know, your husband needs to be part of this too. Oh, if you're doing a side gig, if you're moonlighting, you're not really contributing to the cause. Now, 7 years later, I'm like, oh my God. But inside the thing, there was just all these little things that made it seem like, oh, okay, no, I see. All right, sure. I mean, it's a little weird, but fine. When you talk about cults and it makes you think of your old job, is always always fun to notice. Hmm. Always fun to pay attention to.
Well, this a couple things. Number one, as an unschooling parent, one of the things that I asked my daughter to look into based on her own curiosities was, what are the components of being a cult? And I'll never forget when she came up to me and was just like, I think all churches are a cult. And I was like, do explain. But to be honest, I really couldn't necessarily argue with her because depending on the extreme nature of how the church responds to people not following their tenets, people get excommunicated all the time. People get punished. People get abused. There are lots of things that happen in a church that, depending on that church, does meet many of the criteria that fits under a cult. Obviously, again, it depends on how extreme those things are. I was like, actually, that's really helpful for you to know. Because all I've been saying to my kids is like, if anybody ever tells you that a comet's about to hit and you the only one who's going to survive because you happen to be sitting with some fool, please know that that shit ain't real and you need to run. Yes. Yeah, you are not that special. Let your mother tell you.
Absolutely. Some of the more subtle pieces around a high consequence for leaving. So if there's a strong line of inside outside, and to be a person, to be embodied, to have self-determination has a high consequence and you're punished heavily, those are things to pay attention to. You don't even need to label it a cult, but if there's a high consequence for leaving because you have asserted your autonomy, that is a good thing to pay attention to and to move away from.
Yes, it's like the power and control wheel, right? Like we use that as a tool all the time. If there are things in your relationship, you don't have to have the most abusive relationship with the religious institution that you choose to participate in for it to be not safe for you and your family based on how the leadership is managing their vocation as a pastor or whatever. This is one of those things where I feel like, okay, if you are trying to create a space for people to practice spirituality, these are clear how not to create a healthy environment for the people who you are attempting to serve, save, what have you. In terms of places of employment too, one of the things that we've done at Firecracker is we actively work to protect people's body of work outside of the organization while under the mantle of the organization, right? Like people get credit for their work. People are encouraged to create things that will go with them when they leave.
That's really beautiful leadership. Thank you for sharing that because that's so important and rare, actually.
I just feel so grateful. You know, my colleague Tara, who's now one of our co-directors, when she came to the organization, we were growing and it was just something we hadn't considered. You know, I was a single leader. There were people who worked there, but we didn't really think about what it meant to have these big, brilliant brains that are contributing to a mission, right? Like we're all trying to end child sexual abuse. So what does it matter, right? Like a lot of organizations be like, we're all in it together. That means all of this is pushed together and we just put it out into the world.
That was my previous org that is like, you know, you should care enough about the mission of supporting queer and trans survivors of domestic and sexual violence that, you know, it was selfish to want to take your sick leave, for instance.
100%. When you're looking at the story of Scientology or the story of anything that's been named a cult or the story of any nonprofit that has done harm to people, I think using that list of what does it mean to be a cult or what does it mean to be abusive and hold it up against your activities and really ask about from the inside, you know, we're a healing justice practice site. So we say it's inside out. So we have to be the first ones to check in with ourselves about whether something is just. And there are ways to know whether you're doing something that is just. And if you are holding tightly to people's productivity and imagination and work and not allowing autonomy and choice and even just honoring the fact that they are that brilliant, that they have built that body of work outside of your control, right? Like, yes, do we create the conditions so that people have access to things that they can learn and be in relationship with other people to learn? And yes, we are holding the container for sure. And there is some argument that could be made that our reputation makes some of that possible. But does that mean that we have ownership? No. And I think that this is what happens in these type of environments when the focus is on control and making sure that the higher goal is always the priority, even if you are hurting so many people and separating families and stealing and harassing and doxing and all of these things. But it's all for the purpose of this higher good. I out of hand reject it. It's dangerous. It's gross. And it really does nothing to honor the fact that anybody that you come into contact with seeking something, right, whether it's spirituality, nonprofit, whatever you're talking about, someone is coming to you because they are seeking something. It is a manipulation and a exploitation of people who are in need, which is all of us. We all need something, whether it's finances or whether we're trying to get ourselves healed from something terrible that happened.
Or community or connection or care.
Yeah. And so to bring it back to Tom Cruise, having him be someone who is so respected in Hollywood and really protected. You know, we didn't get to understand why Katie Holmes, why it felt like she was fleeing, right? Like, we don't have that information. And there has been no consequences for him being a part of this church that is actively doing harm to people who literally pay to be there. And we often will make excuses for people who are rich, whether they're celebrities or not, and be like, oh, they just didn't know. They're so disconnected from reality. I reject that as well. I think that our privilege does not excuse us from looking around and being like, why can't they tell me no? Like, why is no one telling me no? There are responsibilities for your privilege. And of course, I'm not just talking about Tom Cruise. There are a lot of people in Hollywood that are a part of the Church of Scientology. I'm not going to read you the list, but there are a lot of people that either are or have been members of the Church of Scientology. And so that tells me, again, when we talk about who knows what and when and how, I find it very difficult to believe. Actually, I don't find it difficult. Let me not lie. I do not believe that these people do not know that they are involved in a church that is causing harm to people. And I just don't think they care. And I think the privilege is that, like, but
it benefits them not to know.
It benefits them not to know. And then if I were going to be gracious, I would say that many of the celebrities that are, like, big time celebrities have been in the game since they were very, very young people. And entered the church as very, very young adults. Some maybe would say that their brains weren't fully developed, right? Our brains develop at 24, 25. And they also are subject to a similar amount of brainwashing, coercion, control, even if they are higher up in the church. So there is something to that. And I don't want to deny that Tom Cruise or anybody who is in Hollywood that, you know, happened to have gotten really famous after joining the Church of Scientology did not experience the harm of this church. What I am saying, though, is they have the privilege and access to understand, and they're not going to be hurt by leaving in the same way that the rest of the people within this church have been hurt and have published books and articles and been very publicly sharing deeply traumatic stories. There's another documentary called Going Clear. There are some really heartbreaking stories. Going back to that conversation about needs, losing community, losing financial support, losing their history. When you think about leaving.
Losing family.
Yeah, like, it's heartbreaking. And so I'm not going to sit here and pretend like Tom Cruise doesn't have access to Daddy Google, because I know he does.
Yeah. Well, and if you are the very public face of this organization, you're hearing from people about their complaints and concerns. And in some ways, I think probably Tom Cruise is the most public and most famous Scientologist. He is very well known for his connection to Scientology. People are telling him what they think about Scientology in social media and other places. There's no way he does not know. Because you can't be a successful celebrity at the scale that he's at without having a sense about what the public thinks, because that's part of how you stay famous, is to pay attention to public response.
Right. His PR team is absolutely managing this. This is a PR crisis that is actively being managed. If you belong to a church that is causing harm, it reminds me of Bikram, right? When it came out that Bikram had all of these moments of violence around sexual violence within the yoga community, people who were affiliated with Bikram Yoga really had a crisis moment where they had to figure out how to take what was good. And I don't know enough to know anything about Bikram Yoga outside of, I know someone who was running a studio who literally changed the name of their studio and had to figure out a different path forward to pull those things things apart, but to have to figure out how to take what was good and try to distance yourself from the violence that happened, that's a moment. And I have to think that with every new documentary and every new book, someone on Tom Cruise's team is managing it. And the other reason that I am speaking with so much certainty about this is because if Tom Cruise really believed, as he said in this video, then wouldn't he be telling us what to do? Wouldn't he be really evangelizing Scientology? He has this incredibly large platform. So if they have the solution to addiction and all these crises that happen across the globe, and you have someone like Tom Cruise as your spokesperson, along with multiple other celebrities, why isn't he out in these streets building houses or some shit? Like, I don't know.
Well, Tajmika, you have to pay $500,000 for the privilege of that information. You can't just freely give it away. That costs you money to know the secrets of the universe.
You know what? You're right. I forgot. He has to franchise it so that we can have it.
You have to franchise. It's not free. We're not giving the secrets of the universe away for free. That costs you money.
You're right. That is true. Correct. Right. Oh, there it is. Never mind. My concerns have been alleviated.
Our buddy capitalism is the answer. It's like, if money and resource, that's why we don't give away the secrets of the universe. If you can pay, you can know.
You can know. And then you won't have those problems. But these other fuckers, they're on their own. If that doesn't speak to the altruism of the Church of Scientology, I don't know what is. The other thing I wanted to mention that I thought was really good about the My Scientology movie that felt a little bit different is that throughout the entire filming, there are moments when Mark Rathbun, that senior church official, he was actually in charge of some of this surveillance and harassment and things like that that were happening. And he really struggled to be able to reflect on that duality of being a person who was in a church that was harmful, but who was really a high-level person who was doing a lot of harm. I would have appreciated him being able to answer with a little more thoughtfulness, but you could see he's just not there yet. He's like, I'm distancing myself from this thing. And right now, I think his survival depends on, I mean, and I'm using survival very generally, but I think his emotional safety and well-being really relies on him disassociating himself from the harm that was done, which I think, again, a thread that you see through the training and the grooming and being willing to accept just about anything from the leadership of the Church of Scientology and anyone who's above you.
Yeah. Well, part of being a grounded, centered, accountable leader is having people who will hold you accountable. That unchecked leadership is so dangerous. And this is exactly, as you were saying, making the conditions from that. So if no one can say no to you, if there are consequences for that. And so anytime you have a leader who doesn't have people who can come collect them. And that's what I think about all the time in learning from nonprofits or other kind of community organizations. How do I want to cultivate leadership? What are the leaders I will learn from and I want to lead me? Are folks who can say, yes, if I'm acting bad, if I'm not accountable, if I am doing harm, here are the people who will come collect me. Like, here's their names, here's their phone numbers. There are people who I am accountable to, who you can know, who you can be in a relationship with. That's how I think about the tenets of how do we have grounded, accountable leaders, is you should be very specific. These people will tell me when I am wrong. And if you don't know who's going to tell you you're wrong, then I would be really thoughtful as a leader about how's it going.
Yeah. If you've never had someone on your team challenge you about your behavior, chances are it's not going well in terms of the accountability practices, because we can only practice self-accountability as far as we know ourselves and can perceive ourselves. We can't possibly know enough to practice self-accountability with 100% accuracy. It is a requirement of being a leader, even in shared leadership. That's the benefit of having shared leadership. I can tell you right now, my co-directors have no problem.
Which is an important part of co-director, co-leader, is someone who will be like, nope, that's not it.
Yep.
Nope. Mm-hmm. Love you. That's not it.
And we can disagree and we can have principled struggle about things that we disagree about. But that's the beauty of having leadership where relationship is at the center and there is an already established expectation that we're going to practice both self-accountability and community accountability together, because that's the expectation, right? So like when someone asks me why I did something, I'm not going to be like, oh, how could you ever question me? Like, what? Don't you know who I am? And they're like, yeah, we know, because you signed on the dotted line that this is exactly what you wanted.
Exactly. Exactly. Which, as someone who has had my loved ones come and collect me, I will say I've never been like, thank you so much as my first response. Thank you so much. I've been like, you don't know. And then later be like, oh, wait, no, these are literally the people that know me the best and love me and have my best interests. Pause. Let's just think. Okay, mm-hmm. Let's just be curious mm-hmm. if the people you love mm-hmm. are saying you're not acting right.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I have to report that you do, in fact, know me.
Exactly.
And I feel a little offended by how well you know me in this moment. But I have to acknowledge that you have a point.
This happens with Danny all the time because he knows me so well. And we've been together, we just celebrated 16 years being together. And when he challenges me, particularly if I am wrong, I've had to learn this experience where I get this reaction where I'm like, he doesn't know me. And every single time I have that feeling, I have to apologize later and I'm wrong. And so now I've learned enough to at least know, oh, we're having that thing I have always have to apologize for. Even if in this moment, I still don't think you're right. Maybe I should just be quiet and listen and get curious instead of being like, mm-hmm. no, actually, you know, defending myself. And I have not gotten to the point where I don't have the feeling of like, you don't fucking know me. But I have gotten to the point of being like, oop, every time you feel like this, you have to apologize. So just curiosity is our strategy. Close your mouth and be curious so you don't have to apologize. Because it's like worse to like be wrong and then have to apologize for your action for being told you have something to tend to. So I'm learning to at least not have to like apologize for the thing. Okay.
I'm going to have to work on that. I have a friend, Tyler, who I was talking to him about this. And I think I said something along the lines, like, people can tell me if I'm wrong. And he goes, well, and I was like, Tyler. And he was like, well, I can tell you you're wrong, but you're still going to fight me for a minute. And I was like, well, I'm not going to not fight. Like, of course, I don't do anything thinking I'm wrong. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not like out here trying to hurt people's feelings trying to do things in a way that aren't going to work out for everybody. Yeah. And so when you first tell me, of course, I'm going to be like, you're going to need to explain that a little bit further because I'm 100% sure in this moment.
Yep. Exactly.
That at minimum, I'm doing the best I can, right? Like I'm doing the best I could in that moment. And so then I'm like, okay, you're probably right. Like it takes a minute for sure. We were just laughing about that a couple weeks ago because he was like, well, and I was like, okay, but you can't just tell me anything.
Yep, exactly. That's exactly the thing where I'm just trying to be like, okay, can I just soften my fight response? Doesn't mean to everyone, like literally just with Danny and my friend Lady. Those are mm-hmm. two people who love me and who will definitely tell me when I'm wrong. Maybe with just the two of them, could I just soften my fight response? It's a work in progress.
We're all growing. It's all a part of it. That's another thing that is important when you talk about cults, whether it's a cult or just an unhealthy environment of any type of organization, institution. It's not just about being willing to let people tell you things. It's also about, do you trust them? And can you trust them more than the intensity of this organization, right? Based on the stories that I've heard, there are lots of people whose families were concerned, who were like, why are you doing this? Or people who left and tried to bring their family with them and their family wouldn't leave. It's definitely a curiosity of mine. I think that's why I get so caught up in these stories around, regardless of whether we call them cults or not, but institutional harm and abuse, is because they typically start with someone who is trying to do something really good in their mind in the way that they think it should happen. And then power and control gets introduced, and then we're off to the races, and suddenly it's a cult causing massive harm to lots of people. And I'm very curious about those moments in between of the relationships of who had the opportunity to say, hey, this is going in a direction that seems really dangerous or seems like it could be harmful. And the people who fell off and then the intensity increased. I'm very curious about that because it's so often happening. you know, and you're bringing up nonprofits. I wouldn't even think about nonprofits, but like it so often happens in community groups, on college campuses. We have yet to figure out how to effectively disrupt these types of groups that end up causing so much harm over the long term.
Yeah, it makes me think about one of the core questions in the transformative justice work I do that I ask almost everybody that is involved in particular moments of harm or in patterns of violence is asking everyone, what need were you trying to get met? Mm-hmm. And just getting curious for folks around when they find themselves in abusive organizations, in situations that might be, if it's not a cult, but like culty, or just where there's like harm happening in patterned ways.
Adjacent to.
Yeah, inside organizations, groups, communities. Like you said, people join to get needs met. They join for a reason. And then from unchecked power, from lack of accountability, from people hoarding resources, from all sorts of different ways that patterns of harm happen, it goes awry. But no one starts an organization, starts a thing, especially groups of people don't join because they think it's going to go awry. They're joining because it's meeting some need. Getting curious is like, what need is that meeting? Mm-hmm. Is it meeting connection? Is it meeting, are folks needing support and healing from harm, pain, trauma? If you just cannot find your way through, and then someone tells you they have the magical answer. Scientology knows all. Scientology knows how to heal addiction. Scientology can tell you all of those things, and you haven't known how to get that attended to. That is a really compelling carrot to hold out for folks. As we get curious, you know, how do we help people attend to, what does that serve for you? How do you get that need met? And how else can we support people? Because in the absence of anything, it's really easy for wacky people to come in and say, drink this potion and we'll solve your harm. And then have people get pretty deep in before they realize that's not true.
In the movement world around ending sexual violence, child sexual abuse in particular, we often say that if we can't solve child sexual abuse, we are not going to be able to approach other forms of harm and violence because there's so much trauma and disconnection and harm that gets perpetuated just based on the fact that we're hurting children. There are consequences for that generationally that we're not able to resolve that then trickles into other things like having a deep well of need that allows you to seek out a community that's actually going to further harm you and continue to cause generational trauma for your family moving into the future. So there's a lot of things about these types of organizations. I'm not excited to talk about them, but I just feel like there are moments and spaces of intervention that we have not figured out yet that would be a really powerful culture shifting thing that we need. Like we actually need it. And elevating people like Tom Cruise or John Travolta or what's her name? The one who's in Handmaid's Tale.
Oh.
It's the other famous Scientologist.
With the face that she always has like very intense facial.
With the face. I had to stop watching The Handmaid's Tale because I was like, if they do a June, her name is June. That's not her actress name. But I'm like, if they do another close-up on June's quivering face, I am going to lose my mind. I'm so over it. And you know, she directed the last season. And I'm like, so she's actually the one who's doing the close-ups on her own damn face.
Oh yeah. Elizabeth Moss. She's a Scientologist. This episode is you reminding me of like little snippets of things in pop culture that I've remembered and forgotten. And I think as Handmaid's Tale was wrapping up, there was a lot of interviews and stuff. And I had heard just in that, that she was a Scientologist.
It's just too much. And no one ever asks in those interviews, by the way. No one ever fucking says, what about these families that are in this documentary? Like, and you know, to be, again, trying to be fair, no one is asking that of Catholic famous people either, right? But there is a different kind of texture to their relationship with Scientology in that people who are Catholic are not giving the church necessarily millions of dollars just to go to church, just to get access to the hymnal. You know what I mean?
And a tenet of being Catholic doesn't require you to publicly talk about it because you are famous. Like those things aren't necessarily inherently connected to Catholicism versus Scientology. There is an expectation and a requirement that you use your platform to, as a part of belonging. There is something that's different about that. And that does feel like it brings some sort of journalistic question about if the reason you're talking to someone is because they're famous and their fame is inherently connected to the requirements of being a part of Scientology. You might be curious about how those are connected. Well, I'm really looking forward to the rest of the season where we dive deep into all these different pieces. I feel like we always keep finding ourselves back to these themes of, but what about accountability? But why aren't we seeing harm in pop culture? And there's so much more to come for the season. Before we wrap up, are there other Scientology things you wanted to share we didn't get a chance to yet?
I mean, that's the hard thing about Scientology. There is no end. I just want to acknowledge that there's no way to really talk about Scientology in an hour. It is a very complicated, very painful. There's a lot of painful stories that are out there, but I will definitely add many links to materials that people can read if they're interested. There's a rabbit hole that you could fall down. I just want to acknowledge that this is just but a scratch to the surface with a focus on Tom Cruise, but there is a lot of information out there about Scientology, but don't look too close. Okay. Don't look too close. Give yourself a good distance away while you're looking. Don't get caught up.
To support Popaganda, please like, subscribe, and leave a 5-star review. It really makes a difference.